Tom, last night, you know, you look at that game and, hey, Montreal got off to their good start like they usually do, but they didn't score. And that really seemed a difference because when they score first, they're 8-1. When they don't, they haven't won a game yet in the postseason. They're 0-3.
Yeah, the first 10, maybe 15 minutes, Montreal, I thought, looked pretty sharp. And they were trying to throw pucks at Marc-Andre Fleury from all types of angles, create chaos in front, try to poke and prod Marc-Andre Fleury. And I thought that was effective, Greggs, generally. And then it seemed like as the game went on, got further and deeper into the first period, Montreal tried to do that, but then Vegas countered. And it really seemed like Vegas got more physical, closed off any lanes and opportunities the Habs tried to take advantage of, create all of that, and really countered. And Carey Price had to make some big saves. And it seemed like Vegas did a good job. And maybe the game plan from them was to get Price moving side to side. We saw that on a couple of goals. I think of that Shea Theodore play, really nice fake, the little clap tap. Slide it over to Martinez. He slaps it home. And then even the Holden goal, it was almost like Carey Price thought that the pass was going to go back across the seam through the slot, and he almost caught himself, and it left a huge gap for Holden to score. Vegas is deep. Vegas adapted quickly, and Montreal is going to have to find a way to take away those seams that they gave the Golden Knights, and the Golden Knights took advantage of. But hey, game ones don't tell the tale of the entire series. And for the first time, too, we didn't see a crazy scenario, injury, or guy take himself out of a series like Scheifele did in game one against the Habs, or the way Tavares went down in game one for the Leafs in that Habs series as well.
Tommy, were you surprised at how many scrums and mucky-mucks were going on to start the game?
I like the mucky-mucks.
Yeah,
I thought that
it.
Was great.
Like, they just started, and, like, I was like, you know, mucky-muck, battle, face wash. Like, it was almost constant for the first, I don't know, almost the whole period, but for sure the first, I don't know, 8 to 10 minutes.
And I thought that was part of the Habs game plan. You saw Gallagher poke away. Yeah. You saw Perry getting in there. And I thought that that was part of their deal, that they wanted to get to Fleury and maybe rattle him a little bit. And it seemed like the Knights wanted to get involved too. They would push the guys out. And then it started those scrums. And with Greg starting the segment talking about the penalties and the Vegas broadcasters talking about that, like, maybe that's what kind of got Montreal into a little bit of trouble with the penalties, is they started taking little ticky-tack dumb penalties that they shouldn't have. Like, I saw Edmondson. I know he's a big, tall, strong defenseman that has the physical edge, but, like, there was one sequence of mucky muck, if you will, where I think he went out of his way to cross-check whoever was in front of him from the Knights like 4 or 5 times. And at some point, the ref's just going to get fed up, regardless of the playoffs, and say, all right, enough. I got to call a penalty on you for you to stop, you know? So maybe they overdid a little bit, and maybe it cost them. But the Knights took some penalties, too. Vegas was able to take advantage of a couple of its opportunities.
Tommy, a few other things. Strede alluded to it earlier, and I know you've been following it closely with you know, baseball and the 10-day ban for the sticky stuff. But this is kind of twofold, because but baseball can really be blamed for this, because the reason the pitchers, to a small extent, are doing this is because baseball is constantly changing the feel of the ball every year. And when you consider how important that is, like, Strutty, I don't know if you ever had, like, new glossier pucks. You know what I mean? Like, it seems ridiculous that they keep changing the texture of the baseball year after year. So I do have a little empathy here for the pitchers, because baseball just can't seem to get out of their way. Like, why do you always have to change the ball? Just go year to year to year. It should be the same ball.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about it a little bit with Pete Alonso last week, say it all has to do with, like, free agency, and they juice the balls, or they take less off the balls and make them a little bit more dead. This whole thing is interesting, because now you've got pitchers that are essentially, you know, admitting to it, something we all basically knew they were trying to do, get any type of advantage that they could. They've got 6 days before this comes into effect, so they can, I suppose, use foreign substances if they can get away with it for the next 6 days and in their next starts. Like, it's all kind of crazy to me, and adds to the wackiness of baseball. Is that fair to to call it that, boys? Because, like, we're hearing the pitchers complain about one thing, say, and then now some pitchers say, well, you know, I did use it, but now I don't. I don't like using it anymore. I used foreign substances. Nope, not anymore. No, thank you. And then we've got batters complaining. Pete Alonso saying, yeah, he's glad they use sticky stuff if it can, if it helps him with or them with control, and they're not getting, and the batter's not getting smoked in the head like Kevin Pillar was because a ball slips away from one of these guys. It's all over the map. Like, I think it's entertaining because of how crazy it is. I don't even know what to think anymore. And it's almost like baseball's just admitting to all of it to a certain extent. Isn't that kind of what we're gleaning from this?
Yeah, we're joined by Tom Gazzola for the Gazzola Chronicles. It's tough because, you know, Greg's makes a good point that there's a, it seems like an inherent cheating built into this, the program, right? Whether you want to go back to steroids or you want to go back to tampering with balls. I mean, you, I remember growing up, they talked about, and it may be unfair a little bit to pick on the Negroes, but, you know, Phil Negro, they talked a little bit about him and him using a file. Right, to get, now I don't, you know, this is just rumor and all that stuff. So there's always been people cheating at these at this sport, and in part of it is it, I mean, I don't agree with it, but is it not in some ways the history and charm of the sport, Thomas?
That's the crazy thing is it is, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. All that baseball. There's the great scene in, what was it, Major League, where the one older veteran pitcher's got like seven different things that he has on his body, and he's telling the young pitcher what he's using, and you're like, yeah, that's just baseball.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, I can't remember all the substances. Yeah. I don't want to repeat some of them too because they're a little like, ugh, yikes. But I don't know. Like with baseball, you just almost accept it. And you know what? I guess we could just sit back and as fans of the game and just be like, yeah, whatever. Do whatever you want. We're still going to come back and watch it. We're going to talk about the zaniness of it. And we'll let the players, you know, cry foul or point fingers at one another. And we'll just watch the soap opera that unfolds in front of us. That's basically kind of what it's become. And then we'll marvel at the monster home runs when the balls are juiced. And then we'll complain when there's not enough offense. And then when there is a brilliant pitcher who's just absolutely outstanding on the bump, we'll marvel at them as well. And then when we start to see numbers slide or move in a certain direction, then we'll get skeptical about things. And I think that's just going to be how baseball continues to tell its story, and it's ridiculous almost, but hey, part of the charm, Strutty. I think you nailed it on the head.
Tom Gazzola joins us at Sports Leader TSN 1260. Tommy, United States distance runner Shelby Houlihan was banned 4 years for testing positive for steroids, and she claims very adamantly that this came from her eating a pork burrito. Mm-hmm. Because supposedly pork is very high in some of the pigs that they are fed this, that the pig organ has high levels of nandrolone. Are you buying what she is selling?
Well, as you pointed out when we were talking about this off the air, she gave a hair sample and provided a list of food of what she ate and took a polygraph test to try to appeal this decision. But, Greggs, given all that we've seen with track and field athletes in, what, the last 15, 20 years, go as far back as Ben Johnson in, what, 88, do we, as the public and fans of just sports in general, have any trust left in track and field athletes? And that's why I'm going, are you telling me a street meat vendor or food truck feeding you a burrito or taco with pork led to your positive test? And now, to her defense, this is accepted by WADA that they do know that pork does lead to potential false positives. But because of like the track record, literally, of athletes in track and field, I'm very suspicious, even though Houlihan may not have doped, and it was indeed the street meat burrito that she had from the food vendor.
Yeah, it's a really interesting because, you know, you make the good point, Tommy, is that, you know, now pretty much everyone's guilty. You know, we just hear, oh, no, she's guilty. And this one's a hard one. I read this one earlier today. I have a really hard time swallowing this one. Like, it does seem a little bit
The burrito itself or the story?
Well, no, I love burritos. Like, what's that? There's a burrito place in the States I used to go to. I love burritos. I love them. I pound them. I was getting drug tested 3-4 times a year, and I never tested positive. Now, maybe we were testing for something different. Maybe it was a different burrito shop. I'm not saying she's lying, but, you know, what's that? If it's so far-fetched, sometimes people will believe it. But, you know, everyone now is like, I remember specifically when Ben Johnson and Graves, we've talked about this before. It was like, I was like, no, there's no way Ben did it. And then now you look back and not only him, but other people in that race and just, it's crazy. So now I'm almost the other way. I'm like, oh, he or she is taking something for sure. And maybe that's unfair as well. But, you know, we have to restore our faith somehow. And I don't know how that can even happen unless you're kind of a 15-year-old kid.
Oh, you must have loved the Chipotle down there, didn't you?
Chipotle. Thank you. That's the one I was looking for. I love Chipotle. So good.
I'm going to just say, guys, on the record, I don't believe her. Yeah. I don't buy the pork burrito false positive. I'm just going to say, Shelby, I'm sorry. I don't believe you.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing it too, man. I have a hard time believing the pork burrito. Anybody out there ever tested? Here's the other thing. If you knew so much about pork and allegedly it would, then don't have a pork burrito. Have a chicken burrito. Have a beef burrito. I don't know. This one, you know, this one's sketchy. It's kind of like some of Strutty's stories when guys cheap shot him. I'm not sure I truly believe him. So we're going to find out in about 20 minutes if that's true or not. So we look forward to it. Tommy, have yourself a good one and be careful of which pork burritos you eat.
Oh, my goodness. I'll stick with the beef, boys.